So we have lots of radio stations from Rio.
Okay,
Petropolis, is that
name? No. It's Rio de Janeiro City, but it is a suburb of Rio. So
it's a suburb, yeah. Did you grow up listening to the radio?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Including radio soap operas, as I used to love them. They kept me company. So I'd go to school, read a lot in the afternoon, and usually about 2 hours before my mother was to come back from work, I had to clean, and I was, you know, cleaning, listening to the radio, cleaning the house and cooking. Yeah, they kept me company. I liked books a lot, so stories, right? I mean, and I had those books which were from the library from the synagogue where my father used to work. And I had like lots of inappropriate books, and I had also children, like, you know, Sartre, you know, like some books I shouldn't be reading when I was 10.
They were reading Sartre when you were 10.
Yeah, can you believe that? You know, I know it's insane, but, you know, my father would just bring the books from from the synagogue, and, you know, she likes books, give her books. So the stories from the radio soap operas were also, you know. Yeah, it's a funny thing, because it's like reading novels, right? Because, you know, the characters become companions. You get to know them. You are affected by them. You had, you know, reactions. So I liked that company. It's failed right. Love stories, families, you know. Fighting.
Division in love.
Yes, all kinds of rules that, you know, the lovers would break, and then eventually they would break the rules, be punished, and then redeem themselves and be able to be together, which is like this TV soap operas that I wrote about.
Do they deal with the issue of race?
The radio ones, not really, not that I remember. And even the TV soap operas didn't in the period that I studied them, which was from 1978 through 1988. And then later in the 90s, they started dealing with race, like the late 90s, early 2000s, which was when Brazil started its other affirmative action policies in higher education started, and that was like the first term of the Lula administration when more social rights, social justice programs were implemented by the state, like that executive, you know, justice I was talking about. And then the soap operas also changed. And they would talk about race, they would have black families, so they would talk about, have some things on racism, and then at the same time showing middle-class black families, because in the soap operas before that, they usually had two black characters. One was a maid, the other one was some kind of, you know, robber, whatever, you know, unemployed or homeless person. And that's what the ones I wrote about. And then later in the late 90s and early 2000s, they kind of, they tried to include blacks as middle class, of course.
I've been reading a lot about the Muslim youth culture and sort of this idea of rebel music, this book by Hisham Ahwad, and he's speaking a lot about Brazil and the region of Bahia, mm-hmm. and how this kind of urban, Europeanized but also New Yorkized street culture mixed with Islamic sort of centers, cultural centers, the Sufi spirit has sort of seeped into like the youth culture of Brazil. This is just to say that, I mean, this book talks about many, many things and how sort of ideas have traveled. The symbol of the Moorish woman, for example, in Brazil, and the non-white, and the métissage of identities. He was speaking about this idea of transformative justice. And one thing that stood out in your lecture this morning was this very concrete proposal for decolonization. You're talking about the sort of the extraction of native lands and occupied territories, the value that has been extracted that now has to be given back. Maybe we can talk, you have an idea of talking about the extraction of cultural value.
Mm-hmm. Okay, many different ways I could go at both of your comments in terms of something I didn't know about this Muslim culture in Salvador, but it makes sense to me. And then also in terms of extraction, and the other side. In terms of what I didn't know about, I can connect this phenomenon to what was happening in the 80s in Bahia, which was, not only in Bahia, in Brazil, by the Black Brazilian movement, which was an attempt to recuperate Black Brazilian culture from the national discourse, because the miscegenation, mestiçagem discourse in Brazil also meant that the symbols of Africanity were taken as symbols for the nation. So in the whole project of cultural politics of that moment, in Brazil, we had both movements. On the one hand, a movement maybe back in history, which was like take Afro-Brazilian music, Afro-Brazilian religion back to signify a Black Brazilian consciousness. But then at the same time, taking Islam as a symbol of resistance. Why? Because one of the most important slave revolts in Brazil took place in Bahia in the 19th century, and it was organized by the Hausa slave population. And one of the reasons historians say they were successful is because they were writing in Arabic. Number one, they could write and read, and number two, they were carrying messages in Arabic, and the Portuguese, the Brazilians had no idea. At least one cultural group, Olodum, from Salvador, they started kind of politicizing culture in a different way by making connections to Ethiopia on the one hand, and also to the Hausa people from Nigeria and Benin, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So not so much trying to recuperate what the Brazilian national discourse had appropriated, but actually redefining Black culture as a revolutionary culture from the very beginning. So I have a piece about that. I have written about that. So that's interesting to see. I have to look more and learn more about that process. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's still, you know, part of the same process, but the politicization now is also responding to the tropes of war on terror, to the tropes of radicalism, and reconfiguration of the other. Right? So I think I see the same attempt at writing a Black political subject through cultural markers, but not the traditional ones in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So then the question of appropriation, well, you know, is it appropriation when those discourses and symbols are taken to signify a particular kind of political subject, or it's like, obviously, that should be the case. Mm-hmm. So the problem is the how we talk about racial difference. You know, mm-hmm. If you talk about racial difference and cultural difference as given, then that given difference can always be deployed to justify something. But if we look at the process of formation of racial subjects, then you can't naturalize. Then you have to look at the implications. There is an authorized space for Blackness, where Blackness actually has value, and it has value in music, right? In cultural production. That is very clear in Brazil in terms of the whole national identity, and then in the U.S. in terms of the spaces open for Black people, right? And then through music. So it's interesting to see how, for some reason, it doesn't go away, right? I mean, it's always there. That mm-hmm. is. And then we keep having the same fights. Is mm-hmm. Beyoncé, is she radical? Or is she just selling Black mm-hmm. power and she does this? Whatever. But what interests me actually more is what happens even within these commercialization appropriations. So, for instance, I grew up in the 70s with Black power, with soul music, right? And for me, that it had... I mean, it was important as a statement of emancipation. I remember my mother used to like straighten my hair, and I remember I was 11, and I had all those photos of afros in the cover of the big LPs. That I want my hair like that, and I got my afro. So to me, it's like, you see, so that is that, right? And I remember dancing in the square in front of my house, just going out and dancing, soul music and. So that, you know, it was there because of the global commercialization, but yet it was made available to me in the same way that hip hop is made available to young Aboriginal kids in Australia, right?
Right.
Go to the Red Center, as I have been, people asking me, because everywhere I go, I become African-American. It's like about hip-hop and all the figures. And I know, even from family connections with the young indigenous kids, that it's, you know, it allows them to articulate something. And in rural Australia, then look like it's nothing to do with the Bronx, right? But then at the same time, it has, because you have police brutality, you have death in custody, you have criminalization. All that is described, it's there, right? So it works both ways. You know, of course, we have all the critique of the industry and the capitalism, and then at the same time, these appropriations on the ground.